Somers to Yonkers, Tarrytown to Portchester.
We've got Westchester covered.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
From City Center at White Plains, Westchester Talk Radio presents the 27th edition of Fran's World. This is Jim Cleefield speaking. Fran's World is produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center. Hightower Westchester, your wealth is managed to a fiduciary standard. White Plains Hospital, exceptional every day. Westchester County Office of Economic Development, Robeson, the house that service built, and Accorda Therapeutics, Life Science. Don't forget, please download the Westchester Talk Radio app on iTunes through the App Store at Westchester Talk. You can like us on Facebook at Westchester Talk Radio, and please follow us on Instagram. You'll find us there at Shark Creative. And now the show starring the woman who really loves to talk. She's the world's fastest talking woman. She lives in her world, and you're welcome to it. It's Fran's World. And now, here's your host, Fran Capo.
Yay! Oh, here we are in City Center. Hi, Jim. Hi, Matt. You guys had a great Thanksgiving?
Hello there. I did.
Yes, great. Fantastic. And Black Friday. Yeah, the mall is packed. But you know that last I left you guys, I was going to go into Managua, into the in Nicaragua, the Masaya volcano, active volcano, and zip line in it. And I did it, and I became the second woman in the history of the world to go into that volcano. And it was really cool because I got to tell you, you know, you're wearing gas masks. There's sulfur. If you even have jewelry on, it tarnishes in like a second. At night, it's acid rain, so you have to stay inside your tents because the acid rain could burn your skin. And if you get close to the lava, you have to be wearing heat suits. Luckily, we only went down to the first platform, and you descend into through a zip line down to the first level. Well, because I decided I would be the first one in, I was also the first one out, but unfortunately, as I was coming up, the handle broke of them bringing me back up.
Wow.
And so what happened was I hear them go, oops, the handle broke. I went, oh, that's not good. So on the radio, they go, Fran, don't worry. We just ran out of kerosene. And I'm like, we're on the top of a volcano. Where are we going to get kerosene? And then they said, no, don't worry. 45 minutes later, vultures are starting to spin around me. I hear them. And so after the vultures do, I'm like, great. I'm like meat on a stick. And I found out that the only way they got me up, I thought the machine was working. It was actually seven people towing me up a line. That's how they did it. They brought me up that line. So it was just amazing. And now I'm getting ready to leave again in 2 days to go do my first TEDx talk in Hilton Head. So keeping busy. But this is what I want to say is, speaking of Masaya and Nicaragua, my first guest actually has performed in Masaya. His name is Alan Chappelle. He was born in Stamford, Connecticut, into a family of musicians and has made music around the world from Mumbai to Managua, where I just was. He's currently splits his time writing and recording music with his band Chappelle while advertising tech companies on issues related to consumer privacy. Alan just released his fourth studio album called Penultimate a few months ago, which has been played on over 150 radio stations around the country so far. Penultimate is near perfect synthesis of Chappelle's two passions. So Alan's music can be heard, if you guys want to listen to it, on Spotify, Pandora, and on his website, ChappelleMusic.com. And I listened to his song called I Am Zuck, which is based on the Facebook, you know, Mark Zuckerberg. And I am so pleased to have him here. So, Alan, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Fran. It's nice to meet you.
Oh, great. Well, now, let's just get started because, I mean, you do so many things. So, you played music at a very young age. You were, like, the age of six, right, when you first started?
I think my first concert was at the age of five, and I was in the basement of the Ferguson Library in Stamford, Connecticut. It was a talent show. And I remember I sang a cappella, I sang Nowhere Man by the Beatles.
Oh, my God. I love it. At 5 years old, you're doing this. This is awesome. And was it your idea or was it like your parents saying, you know, hey, Al, come on, you're cute, go perform?
No, my parents were always very supportive, but it was really my idea. And I think that show kind of spoiled me because at five, you can go up there and do just about anything.
That's right. Exactly. They'll go, oh, he's cute. Look at this shirt. Let's smile. Let's applaud, right? But luckily, you were good. Now, your band, Chappelle, has recently shared the stage with some really iconic bands. So just name some of them so people understand that. Now, we're not just talking to a guy who performed once, you know, when he was five.
No, so we've recently opened up for the bands Everclear, the Gin Blossoms, the Little River Band, the Average White Band, a band called Jack O'Pierce.
Wow.
It's been just so much fun.
Now, because obviously these are popular, famous bands, when you were younger, did you say, wow, one day I want to perform with these bands?
Well, you know, back in the day, we used to play with a band called Flock of Seagulls, which is a long, long time ago, and Echo and the Bunnymen and 10,000 Maniacs. And so I've been pretty fortunate in that we've been able to share the stage with a bunch of bands over the years. And it's just always been a lot of fun.
And you know what? And they've been fortunate to be able to share it with you. So it's got to go both ways. So now, you live in the West Village, right, in New York?
I do. I've lived here for most of the last 20 years.
And I was born, we have that in common too, because I was born in Greenwich Village. So I lived in the village also when I was young. So I moved out to Queens. Does living in the village, you know, with everything crazy going on, affect your writing in any way?
It's the most wonderful place to write in the whole world. I spend most Saturdays just walking up and down Hudson Street and Greenwich Street and just walking up and down, literally from Meatpacking down to Tribeca, trying to find song lyrics. And it's one of my favorite things to do. Actually, I'll do it tomorrow.
Well, good. Well, take pictures. No, but now, well, let me ask you a question, though. So when, you know, because it depends. People are inspired by different things. So sometimes people are inspired, you know, when they see something and then it makes them think of a song. And other people are inspired when they're by themselves and then just left to their own devices in their head. Which kind of writer are you?
I think a little bit of both. I will all of a sudden be in mid-conversation and have to walk away and because a melody will be digging a hole into my brain. So sometimes I do it when I'm with people, but when I really write, when I really want to try to get lyrics down, when I want to try to really understand what I want to talk about, I almost always do that alone.
You know, it's interesting because people who are in our type of business, now you're a musician, I'm a stand-up comic and a writer, so it's a little bit different, but we always carry a pen and paper. But the thing that people don't understand is if you don't write it the moment you think it, and it's like the perfect sentence, you can lose it. So you have to, like, right away get that thought down as it comes up.
Oh, absolutely. And also, sometimes you just need to get the melody out. And so I will sing things into my phone and come back to them a day or a week later. But having it recorded helps me recapture that moment.
Oh, see, you know, that's really interesting because we have that capability now that you could just grab your phone and do that. But when you were, you know, five, six, well, when you were five, you probably didn't care. But when you were, you know, as you were, you know, 15, 16, and we didn't have, you know, a phone with a microphone right near us, you then just would have to remember the melody and then hopefully go down and write it.
It was so much more difficult because you really had to remember what you did a day or a week ago. And then try to build on that, and it made it so much more difficult.
Yeah. Now you're once the song that I heard. I mean, I heard a couple of them, but you have a song titled "I Am Zuck," and that's about Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook. So tell me about that song, and because basically it's like a never going to happen confession of him, right?
Right. Well, I work in the tech space, and so I have a sort of unique vantage point into what goes on with what's gone on with Facebook over the last decade. And so I was home alone writing one night, and I thought, wouldn't it be funny to do this faux confessional for Mark Zuckerberg? And I started just making things up. I started coming up with just crazy ideas, you know, Russian conspiracies, selling voter data. And then it turned out 2 years later that a lot of the things that I had written, mostly as a joke, came true.
I know. I was just thinking that when you said that, I'm going, wait a minute, what do you mean you just made that up? Didn't we just go through that? Yeah.
Sometimes, I guess my brain was really tapped in that day.
Well, so let me ask you, do you know if he's heard that song?
I understand that he has heard that song and he does not. not liking very much.
Okay. So when I go on Facebook...
Truth is hard.
Okay, because when I go on Facebook, then I should probably not mention, hey, listen to this song on Facebook. And all of a sudden, the next thing I know, I'm blocked. Yeah, right? It's like, wait a minute, I don't understand. I had Alan Chappelle on, and the next thing I knew, I was blocked, all because of a song. But I think that's great. You're doing it. Actually, I read a quote, and I wasn't sure if it was a quote. I think it's a quote that they said about you, Steve Jobs, that he loved what you did because it was the intersection of liberal arts and technology, and he said, it makes my heart sing. So I wasn't quite sure if that was a quote he was saying about you, or if that just happened to be corresponding with your philosophy.
I think that just happened to be in corresponding with my philosophy, but I certainly agree with that.
Well, of course you better, because you're in both worlds, you know. So now, what you started to tap on was that you advise tech companies on privacy issues. So what does that mean? Like, what do you advise them to do?
Well, I studied human rights when I went to law school. And these days I spend time helping companies who collect data about consumers. Sometimes it's not just your name or your email address. There's all kinds of data that companies can collect via your computer. And sometimes they just want to be able to advertise to you a little bit more robustly, or a little bit, give you an ad that you want. And there's a rule set around what you can do with that data, and I help companies understand what that rule set is.
So is it something that you came up with, or is this actual law?
There's industry standards, and I sit on a bunch of industry standards groups to help create what they call self-regulatory rules. So some of it is based in the law. So, for example, in the European Union, there's now this privacy regulation that is law, and in the state of California, it has a law that comes into effect in about a month that has some pretty stringent rules on what one can do with consumer data.
So they know. So do you have like two separate websites then? One for your advising and one for your music?
I do, because they're very different things. Even though sometimes I bring them together, particularly with the songs on Penultimate, but they're different things.
Right. I always wonder, because sometimes, like, for example, and I'm not kidding, I was talking, and, you know, hey, I just got back from the volcano, blah, blah, and all of a sudden this advertisement pops up on my phone about, oh, visit, here are volcanoes you can visit. I'm like, hey, I wasn't talking to your phone. How did you know that, you know? It's like, I don't like you listening in. I did not give you permission. And my phone wasn't on. I was just talking about it, but I had my phone with me. Or I'll see, obviously, like ads come up. You know, sometimes it works. I like those shoes. All right, no problem. I don't care. You know, but other times I'm like, wait a minute, I don't want you knowing everything I'm doing. But how did you get to that point in your career that you did that? I mean, like, how did you go? Did the music come first, or the advising come first?
Oh, the music came first, because I started that, you know, at five and played in bands in college and after. I started working in what they used to call new media. I worked in a new media company back in the late 90s, and that got me into this digital media world. And little by little, I just decided to put out my shingle as a attorney advising companies on privacy issues.
Did you say attorney? You're also an attorney?
I am.
Oh, my gosh, a man of so many talents. I love it. I love it. I know a couple of comics who are attorneys that also do stand-up. Yeah, obviously, I said comics, so they do stand-up, which is hysterical because they use two different names. You know, their attorney shingle and then their other shingle. I'm like, really? Like, people can't find you? You got the same face. But so I do want to ask you this. So I'm curious. Is it true that the producers of HBO Silicon Alley considered adapting one of their characters after you? And if so, which one?
Well, so I met somebody in an airport bar in L.A. A few years ago. And, you know, when your flight's delayed and you just start talking to the guy next to you, and it turns out that guy is one of the producers for Silicon Alley. And I talked to him a little bit about what I did. And I don't know if you watched the show, but a few years ago they had a focus on children's privacy in one of the episodes. And they were talking about having somebody like me come on and be kind of the advisor who had a side career in music, because they kind of thought it was a neat narrative. And so there was some discussion about it, but for for better or worse, it never came to anything. But it was pretty exciting just to be considered.
But wait a minute. So when they say a character, so you would have been the actor in it, or they would have made a character that did what you did?
They would have made a character that did what I did.
Yeah. Okay, because you didn't want to be on camera?
I'm a musician. I don't feel like I'm an actor.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? I'm sure if you're a musician, you get upstage. You don't just stand there with the guitar or, you know, whatever you're playing, just going, da-na-na. You're moving around. You're moving your hips. You're making girls go, oh, my God, let me touch Alan. You're doing all that stuff. That is acting. Okay, so.
Well, that's a good way of looking at it. And, yeah, we try to bring a party every time we play.
Yeah, of course. Otherwise, you know, people don't want to see people live. They could just listen to the music. If it's not a show, why see them? You know what I mean? You have a much better seat, from your television set, you know, at home. You know, so you also have another album coming out. Tell us about that album and what is on that.
Yeah, this next album is called Cinco, which is our fifth album.
Which is called what? What is it called?
Cinco. Cinco.
Oh, Cinco, like Cinco de Mayo, C-I-N-C-O?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's called Cinco because it's my fifth album, but also because the album cover is not Messiah, but another small village in Nicaragua where my wife is from.
Oh, my God. How cool. I mean, and honestly, prior to 2 weeks ago, I honestly would have known nothing about Nicaragua if I hadn't gone to the volcano. I mean, I didn't even know this whole... I mean, obviously, I knew it existed. But the people are so there. The women are really beautiful, so you must have a beautiful wife.
The people there are wonderful. Every person I've met in Nicaragua is just a warm, kind person. And if you listen to Penultimate, there's actually three songs there that are about Nicaragua. There's the song Sandinista, The Radio, which was written on the beach, actually, in Nicaragua. And then Yes, We Can, which was also written about two people in Nicaragua.
Cool. And what does Penultimate mean, anyway?
Well, it means second to last.
Oh, it's a Spanish... Is it a Spanish word?
No. It's sort of a fancy word that means second for last.
Oh, I'm not up on my fancy words. Sorry. I didn't know. I got to look that one up. I got to go to the Word Genius app and look for the fancy words division. Okay. Because I was going, was I pronouncing it right? Is it penultimate or how do you pronounce it?
Yes, that's it.
Penultimate. Because I divided it up like that. I'm like, well, penultimate. I actually thought you were saying because you were a writer and it was the ultimate thing that your pen is written. That's what I actually thought. Penultimate.
Well, you're right on, Fran. So I was trying to do a little bit of a wordplay there. So there's a literal meaning, and then there's sort of the you know what I thought people would take from it, and I thought that this was the best album I've ever written.
Really? And how long did it take? I have no knowledge. Like, for me, I've written a couple of books in 2 weeks, and then there are some books that take me 6 months to write. How long does it take you to do an album, like, from concept to, you know, turnkey, so to speak?
Well, it takes about 6 months to write and get the band ready to play it, and then it takes about another 6 months to record.
Oh, why does it take so long to record?
Well, because we do 2 days in the studio with the whole band, and then I like to sit with it a little bit. I like to play with, well, what if we did this with the guitar? What if we tried this with the violin? And so that way I can experiment without a lot of pressure.
Oh, wow.
It's not like we're in every day, but you know, I go in, you know, once a month, and I'll do some work on it.
Cool. And how does it work with the musicians? Because I'm not in that field. So is it a collaborative? Like, do you just go in, or do they say, hey, what if we added this sound or this? Or is it you, it's your vision, and they just follow what you do?
It's my vision, but I really try to create a vibe where everybody can collaborate. So what I ask is that they play my vision first, and then we experiment a little bit, and we maybe adjust the guitar, or we, you know, change a little bit what the violin's doing. But we start with what my vision is, and then we go from there.
Cool. And now, I know we said that you performed from Mumbai to Managua, but are you doing anything local where people could see you? Like, are you going to be playing in, you know, Fairfield or Westchester or Connecticut, anywhere near this area, in the New York area?
We haven't announced them yet, but we'll have at least two shows in February and January in somewhere in Fairfield County. And then I know I'm playing with Everclear again in Rhode Island, which is a little bit of a trek for, I think, your listeners.
Yeah, I know they love you on the air, but they're going, you know what? We'll listen to the iTunes version. Yeah, I don't know if they'll be going there. Listen, I can't even get my fans to, you know, some of them travel 3-4 hours, but then they're like, you know, Fran, is it going to be on video? I'm like, yeah, it is. So you don't have to come. I get it, you know. But so when you perform for the bands, when you perform for like Evergreen and the other big bands that you perform for, do they tell you what songs of theirs they want you to play because you're working opening for them, or you get to pick your own stuff?
Oh, we get to pick our own stuff. Yeah, they you know, we try to do from our roster, and I've got 70 or 80 songs right now, so we try to do stuff that's pretty well in line with what the headliner does. But we get to do our own thing, and it's a lot of fun.
And out of all the songs you've done, like, people always ask this to me about my books and things like that. They go, which is your favorite book? And it's always hard for me to pick, but I do have two favorites. Do you have a favorite song? Like, if somebody said, I've never heard of you, and I want to understand who Alan Chappelle is, where would you say, what song would you tell them to listen to?
I tell them to listen to Ride, which is the first song on Penultimate.
Ride, R-I-D-E, like take a ride. Like
R-I-D-E.
A ride. Okay.
But if you're asking me what my favorite song is, the answer is always the current song I'm writing.
Oh, my God, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And it's because why? Because are you one of those people that lives in the now moment?
I think so. And every single song you write is an opportunity to fall in love.
Huh. That's interesting. I like that. Fall in love with what you're doing, like putting your whole energy, like another baby is being born type thing.
Yes, exactly.
It's funny because that same thing happens. Like, I've had people walk up to me and quote me from a book I've written, and I go, wow, that's a good quote. And they go, do you know who wrote it? I go, no. And they go, you. And I'm like, wow, well, that was pretty cool. I guess I agree with that, because I'm like going, I wrote that like 10 years ago. You know, it sounds like me, but I don't remember every single thing I wrote. You know, I just don't. I just remember that I wrote it, and then it gets out of my mind. I guess it's a little different because as a musician, you're constantly playing the songs and performing them. Whereas as a writer, you write the book, it's out there, and then you're on to the next book. You're not like reading the book out loud to people over and over again.
Right, but you know, with just a word, it's harder to pinpoint. With music, you've got the word, you've got the way I say it, you've got a melody, you've got music behind it, so it's much easier to take you back to that time or place where you wrote it.
Right, right. Hey, and when you, are you the type of performer when you're on stage, like afterwards, do you greet your audience or do you hide in the green room?
Oh, no, every time. I go down to the merch booth. That's almost as fun as the show.
Isn't it? I love that part. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Because I feel like you connect with people on stage in one level because they're enjoying what you're doing as an artist. But then afterwards, they're coming up to you and telling you what part they enjoy. Oh, my God, I love that song. Oh, that was so great when you did this. And it's just so much fun. And I love taking pictures with the people and signing autographs. That part. Don't you like that part?
Oh, it's my favorite. I really do. And people are so nice. And the response we've been getting, particularly over the last 6 months, has just been wonderful and warm. And it's just great.
Now, how many people are in your band?
Six.
Six.
It's bass, drums, guitar, keyboards, and then a violin.
A violin. Okay. Didn't expect that one. Okay. That's cool. And does your wife come to the shows?
Oh, she does. Yeah. She comes to every show. We're going to see. She may not make it to the next one. She is just over 8 months pregnant.
Is this your first?
It's my second, but it's our first.
Congratulations. That is awesome. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So the little baby, I'm sure, is going to come out dancing, you know, because he hear the music. You know, my son came out telling jokes. Yeah, so each one is different. I was wearing my mom like a hat for years, you know. It's like... You know, I mean, so you just, you know, the kids adapt and they, you know, like my son's so used to it, like, yeah, of course you're going to a volcano, Mom. Okay, just let me know you're okay. You know, they get used to it. Dad, what are you doing? You're writing another song? Of course you're writing a song. And I'm sure, well, no, I shouldn't say that because I don't know. Would you ever be inspired to write a song about your baby?
Of course, I already have.
I was going to ask that, but then I got nervous. I went, what if he didn't write about his first kid? Then I'm going to get the first kid all upset. So, good. You wrote a song already about your first kid. Good.
Oh, I've written a song so that on my first album called The Redhead's Allegations, there's a song called Giving Her More.
Giving Her More?
Yeah. My daughter was really upset with me.
Why?
And I remember that. I remember writing the song. I was down at the atrium by the World Trade Center.
Oh, wow. Okay. Why was she upset?
Well, she was 13. So, I mean, on some level, 13-year-olds are often upset at their parents.
Okay. And it's funny because I have a thing that I show a picture of my son bald and with hair. And I always go, look at my son. This is the Hair Club for Men. And people go, your mother disses you on stage every time. I go, I'm not dissing you. I am showing you to the world. You know, totally different. It's all in the way you look at it. But Alan, it is just such a pleasure to talk to you. So now if people want to find and follow you and your calendar and where they could do it, is the best place to go to Chappelle, ChappelleMusic.com?
I think that's the best place. You can also find us on Facebook, which is also Chappelle Music.
Okay, so on Facebook it's also Chappelle Music. And if they want to listen, you know how you could see samples of your songs? Are they on iTunes? Tell people where they could hear samples of your music, or is it best the website?
No, the website's probably best, but you can find them on Amazon and on iTunes and really all the streaming services, Pandora, Spotify.
Perfect. So people, you like this guy. Isn't he very friendly? You got to listen to his music. And especially if you're a Facebook person, you got to listen to I Am Zuck. Okay? And you can hear his music. He's going to be coming. Well, he'll announce the dates, February, March, maybe not, well, in Rhode Island. And just check out his website, which is Chappelle, Chappelle Music. And if you don't know how to spell that, I'm not helping you out there. But just in case, MUSIC.com. And Alan, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll be right back with more of Fran's World in just a minute.
Thanks, Fran.
You're welcome.
Look outside your window. What would you like to see? Imagine all the things that could be done to beautify your property. At Michael Labriola, we've led the field over 35 years. Our expert staff brings all their best to give you what you need.
For more than 40 years, Michael Labriola Incorporated has provided complete landscape construction and site development services that will add beauty, enjoyment, and value to your property. Want to make some changes to your landscape this spring? Maybe extending your living space to the outdoors with a functional outdoor kitchen or adding a patio or walkway? Michael Labriola Incorporated can evaluate your property and offer creative ideas. 914-273-6530. Commercial properties always welcome. Learn more at MichaelLabriolaINC.com.
Michael Labriola, our last name is the first name in landscapes.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
And we're back. You're listening to Fran's World live at City Center, produced by Sharp Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, Lipolis Electronic, Genesis Exhibits, Wartburg, Faceberg Remodeling, and the White Plains WYMCA. Energy, Indian Point Center, Durante Rentals, Reverso Associates, J.P. McHale Pest Management, and Michael Labriola. Don't forget to download the Westchester Talk Radio app on iTunes, and you could also go to FranCapo.com to see where I will be performing all over the world. As you know, I just got back from Nicaragua. I tell you, hey, you got to travel around. You don't want the same people seeing you over and over.
All the way from there to White Plains.
I'm telling you. Yeah, Nicaragua to White Plains. Boy, what diversity. Okay, but my next guest knows all about diversity because he's also a stand-up comic. And you may know him because he has the nickname of Cowboy Bill. And he has two brand new stand-up specials out. The first special, Standing in the Middle, just came out November 15th. And the second one is called The Nutcracker. Read into it what you want. It's a Christmas stand-up spectacular, which is going to come out December 10th. Perfect, right in time for the holiday season. So set it on your calendars. But if you happen to miss it, both specials will be available via video on demand in over 200 million homes. Well, I'm going to watch it too. So that's going to be 201 million homes with Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Google, YouTube, TV, Xbox, Dish, Sling. Listen, it's on all the media. What, do I need to go over all of it? Yes, it's on all the media. And in audio form on Sirius XM, Pandora, iTunes, Spotify. And if I missed one, you let me know. It's through the Comedy Dynamics Network. But here's the cool thing. You know, it's great to make people laugh, but besides being a comic, my guest here, Will Lee Martin, also known as Cowboy Bill, is also dedicated to helping children with cancer and other life-threatening illnesses through his nonprofit Cowboys Who Care Foundation. The organization's sole mission is to provide support, smiles, and free cowboy hats to kids in conjunction with children's medical centers and hospitals across the country. We're going to be talking more about that later, but if you want to jot it down, it's Cowboys with an S, Who Care. Care.org. So, please welcome my guest, Will Lee Martin, also known as Cowboy Bill. So, how are you, Bill?
Good. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Are you all full, and do you have leftovers?
We have a ton of leftovers, yeah. We had the full turkey and the dressing and the whole thing, man. So, it was absolutely just a great time to be at home. And I do want to clarify, you said it's going to be in 200 million homes. They sent me the list, and hopefully I'm a big hit in Uruguay and China and Indonesia, because I think that's some of the lists that they had on there.
Oh, they didn't. Oh, yeah. Well, listen, a lot of times when I do things, people say to me, Fran, you're big in third world countries. I go, hey, whatever. Okay. So, I'll take it. I don't care. You know, but it's funny that you were just saying happy Thanksgiving. One year I decided to put a tin foil on top of the turkey at the top and the bottom as a little bikini. And then when it roasted, I took the bikini off. So it looked like the turkey had bikini marks. So I like doing crazy things like that.
Awesome.
Yeah, you got to think of different things. Yeah, exactly. Next year, just make sure the family's okay with it. So, how many years have you been doing stand-up?
I've been doing stand-up for 23 now. You know, we started in 1996, and it was 4 days before my 30th birthday. I'd written advertising for 9 years out of college, and I hated it every minute of it, but I thought it was going to be my only real chance at show business. And then one day I lost my job in advertising, and actually all of us did. We got sold to another company, and it was my grandmother. I called my grandmother, and I said, you know, I just got fired, and she was like, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't know. She said, go home and look in the mirror and ask yourself, are you happy? You're almost 30 years old, and I've never seen you smile. I like to say I did that, but I didn't. I went home, and I stayed in the fetal position for 5 and a half months.
Okay.
Would have been six, but unemployment ran out in 5 and a half. It's a true story. The UPS driver comes next door because he's delivering to a package to my next door neighbor who was out of town. And I was supposed to get the package for him, but I saw it as another opportunity to tell somebody my sad story, right? God doesn't know me from Adam. I'm telling him I lost my job. I don't know how I'm going to make ends meet. I don't know what to do with my life. And he looked at me like, good, that's my last box I'll bring out here, dude. I hate to tell you, folks, sometimes people don't care you got problems. And oftentimes they're happy that you do. I went home and I looked in the mirror that day, and I turned off the phone, the television, all the distractions of life, and I talked to the fellow in the mirror, what I believe was God that day, and I called my grandmother, and I said, you know, since I was 5 years old, I knew I wanted to be on stage, television, radio, and print. And she said, go for it. And I said, what if I lose the house? She said, buy you another one, boy.
Wow.
I wanted to be 30 or 50 or 80 and go through the should have. And this is from a woman that found out that she had a tumor on her lung about the size of my fist and dying of lung cancer.
And she was telling you this at that time?
Started the whole career.
Wow. You are so lucky you had somebody like that. Not, you know what I mean? Because you were in the depths of, you know, feeling sorry for yourself and the depression. And she was like, snap out of it. You know, it's like that picture in Cher in that movie, you know, Moonstruck, when she smacks his face and snap out of it. You know?
When my grandmother's very supportive. My mother, who passed away in 98, I called her and told her that I decided I wasn't going to pursue any career in advertising. And I muffle the phone. And she muffles the phone. She tells my dad, she goes, he wants to be a comedian. I don't think he's funny.
Oh, God.
And then she got back on the phone like she had never said anything. And she said, your dad said, go for it.
Wow. And you had heard that. Wow. Well, good thing you had your grandmother. That's all I could say. And next time you tell your mother that old comic joke, where'd you learn how to whisper in a helicopter? You know, it's like...
Yeah. It's, well, she turned out to be one of my biggest fans. She really loved the comedy, and then she died suddenly.
Oh, sorry.
But we've been out doing this thing for now 23 years, never looked back. People always ask me, the follow-up question I get, did you lose the house? I lost the house and a truck in the first 18 months.
Oh my God! This sounds like a country western song. But go ahead.
Explains the cowboy hat.
Yeah.
You know, the house I expected to lose because I wasn't high in debt. You know, I don't live in a trailer or anything.
Right.
But the truck, I was fully surprised because the only day I left it out was on Christmas Day. I'm like, nobody's going to repossess a truck on Christmas. Apparently Ford will.
And maybe they had a Jewish guy come get it, so you don't know.
But you don't want me to say anything like that. That would go all over Twitter and everything else.
I'm teasing because of Christmas. That's it. I said it. Frank Capo said it. He did not say it again. Okay. But
I love the New York area. You know, with our Cowboys of Care, who you had mentioned, we did a Orthodox Jewish hospital in the Bronx about 4 years ago. And, you know, we brought 100 cowboy hats into that hospital. And obviously, a lot of those kids had never even seen a cow or a horse, except maybe, you know, in the zoo. And here comes, you know, four or five cowboys with 100 brand new cowboy hats, and we pass those out. And what a remarkable day that was in my life.
But, you know, I want to explain to people something, because I looked at a video that you had online, and at first when I heard, oh, he's handing out cowboy hats, I didn't get it. But here's what I want to say. I was watching your video where the kids, when they have cancer, just think about it, they lose their hair, and nobody wants to lose their hair. And one little kid put on that cowboy hat and said, it makes me feel powerful. And I thought that was such an awesome moment, because it's not so much that you're giving just, hey, here, wear this cowboy hat. What you're doing is giving them something cool. It's like not a disguise to hide from what they have, but a way to make them feel like, wow, I look cool in this hat, and not think about the hair loss. So it's just so much more symbolic than you're just giving them a cowboy hat. And that's what I want people to understand what. Why are you doing that?
How we started the thing. I was asked to put my name on a golf tournament here in Texas for a young lady named Ashley Miller. Her parents were big fans of my stand-up, and I was happy to do it. Then I got to know Ashley. She had a rare cancer, and then her cancer goes into remission, and it came back with a vengeance, and she lost her battle in June 2011. And my wife and I knew we wanted to help. We had five amazingly healthy kids, and knew we wanted to help, didn't know how. And then one day I just Googled kids with cancer images, and had all these big, bright, beautiful faces, beautiful smiles, and bald heads. In the mirror, I could see my cowboy hat, and that's when it hit me. Well, these kids need cowboy hats. What 7-year-old wants to wear a wig? But what 7-year-old wouldn't want to wear a cowboy hat? So we formed Cowboys of Care Foundation, nonprofit organization, and in the last 8.5 years, we've given away a little over 9,000 brand new cowboy hats across the country.
Wow, that is so awesome. See, because, I mean, and it makes you feel good, too, because you're making them laugh. I saw the video. You're making them laugh, and they're putting these cowboy hats on. Sometimes they're big, and, you know, whatever, and it's just like a whole fun thing. Now, you do that. I saw that you're also an actor. You were in a movie, 300 Savage, so I saw you trying to be a bad, you know, am I allowed to say the word donkey's butt? Yeah, okay, badass cop. And... I'm just asking. Last time I said something and they looked at me, they were like, Fran. I was like, hey, what do I know? Okay. And I saw you're also a TV host. So and a reality TV judge. This man is multi-talented here. So, you know.
It's been a big year. You know, it's been a big year. We really have made some just that, you know, some of it's been power of prayer, believe it or not.
I totally believe in that.
My wife asked me, you know, what do you want? And I said, she said, well, you need to ask for it. And, like I said, since I was five, I wanted to be an actor. So I specifically asked the universe, I believe in God, but you don't have to. Just ask the universe what you want.
Right.
And like a week later, I get an email from a guy out of the blue saying, hey, we saw your clips online. We think you'd make a great deputy sheriff in this movie that we're doing called 300 Savage. And would you fly, if we flew you up to Montana, would you be in the movie, come up and film? And I was like, oh my gosh, just out of the blue, Carnival, you know, I do a lot of stuff with Carnival Cruise Lines. They asked me to, I'm in their top three or four ranked comedians out of their 170 roster, and they asked me to be in a reality show for them. And just, the whole career just has always kind of seemed that way. It's been surreal at times.
Well, see, I totally believe in that. I always tell people, you know, I talk to Mother Mary. She talks back. And the very first time I prayed to her, I was like, I was a little nervous. I was like, listen, I'm sorry. I actually don't pray directly to Jesus. I'm praying to you with no offense. I love your son. It's, but woman to woman, can we talk? I mean, because I was like, oh, she's going to be like, oh, great. She's calling me now. She needs something, you know? And so I was just like trying to be like, very diplomatic. I'm like, if you can help me out, it'll be really good, you know? And then I was like, Jesus. What I'm saying is, in the beginning, that's how I did it. Now I just say, this is what I need. And obviously we don't have time to, you and I go back and forth as far as, my power, but I get answers within 3 hours and I love it. And people, and I say, oh, okay, if people believe, I know it works. If you put it with not, you have to have the full emotions there. And God wants you to ask. That's how I believe. Not that we're turning into a Joel Osteen channel all of a sudden, but I'm just saying. But so now the thing is, so you're a father of five, and you have your, now I know, because I was looking online, that you went, and I totally get this, from being a clean comic, then you work the nightclubs, then you start getting more blue, and now you're back to being clean so that the comics can come. But I totally get, because when you work in the nightclubs, sometimes you start going down that route. And so now you're back, the Carnival Cruise, do you stick straight to your act, or are you the type that plays with the audience?
No, I I'm a straight, stand-up. I don't dip in the audience much unless they've warranted it, if they've come at it.
Right.
I've been doing this a long time, but with Carnival, when I first got on there 10 years ago, if you got on a cruise ship, that's where you took your career to die. Honestly, let's be honest about it. And stand up. And that was about 10 or 11 years ago, 12 years ago. And then Carnival came out with this brand new program 10 years ago called the Punchliner Comedy Club. And literally, you do five different 30-minute shows.
Oh, yeah.
And if you go in there and you really work, and work on the craft, I mean, you can really work on the jokes and the timing and come out with a ton of material. And for 7 years, I was on there, and I had already changed my name back to William Lee Martin, back to my maiden name. I felt like Cowboy Bill was limiting my audience because I don't do a cowboy act, and it was
right,
my grandfather gave me a birth, and I just thought it was pigeonholing me a little bit, and so I went back to my maiden name, William Lee Martin. And then one day I'm mowing the grass. I'm like, why can't I grab the brass ring? And I'm still working pretty blue, and just you and I are talking. The answer came, and I put you on a cruise ship for 7 years, and you can change anything about your life. And the only thing you're willing to change was your name, and you wanted me to work the miracle. You want changes, you got to make the changes. You're waiting on me, I'm waiting on you.
Wow.
And that's when we started making wholesale changes in the act.
I love it. See, but at least you listened, because, because there are people that could hear that, and then God later on, you go up to heaven, and then they smack in the head and go, hey, I told you what to do, and you didn't do it. But you did it,
right.
Which is great.
It's like the old joke when the guy's drowning, and he sent out a plane, a helicopter, a boat. He's like, Lord, I kept waiting on you. He goes, what are you waiting on? I sent out a plane, a
right.
boat.
Right.
Exactly. And that was the answer.
Yeah, and they're going to hit you in the head, you know. Now, so, you know, as Billy Crystal, you know, he always used to say 20 years to become an overnight success. You're saying 19 years to find your voice on stage. And you said before that you had opinions, but you didn't have a voice. So can you explain the difference to the audience?
Well, I think it all has to do with conviction. You know, at times when you're up, you know, and I am a father of five, you know, we're not good Catholic, we're just really bad Methodists.
Okay.
But, you know, the act itself was, I mean, it's good. I've been headlining 3 years into the comedy career, so I've been doing it for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I always felt like I had a yeah, but. You know, people would come off stage and go, I love the show, yeah, but. Because mm-hmm. there are certain guys that fit the Jack King personality. You know, the bluer the better, and the more shocking, the better.
Right.
And then there, you know, for me, I've always talked about family and the funny stuff of what it is to be in my life in the middle of the city, the middle of the state, in the middle of the country. And it just didn't fit. Plus, I was running a kids' charity. And so I always felt conflicted. And so now I feel like I can do the show, and I feel like I don't feel like I have a yeah, but in my own head. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, it does, because what you're saying is you felt like you were almost living two lives. Like, oh, I got my clean thing, and even though I'm the same person, maybe that person shouldn't be mixed with the children's charity. But yeah, you were the same person, so you were doing it. And that kind of fits in with your living in the middle webcast, because you talk about being in the middle as middle class, middle-aged husband, and you talk about all, like, family life, right? That's what your live in the middle webcast is about.
Yeah, we take on some controversial stuff. You know, the one that got close to 3 million views was on my stance on whether or not we should give a gun to a teacher. I don't know if it's a good idea or not. I think it's kind of odd that we took away the paddle 30 years ago, but now we're like, you don't hit them. If I got to get you to shoot them.
That's yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, you know, you got to up, I mean, it's years later, you got to up the ante, you know.
So we do talk about some real life stuff, and now I'm doing a brand new podcast that started about a month ago. And
what's it called?
Podcast, you know. Hell, even my seemed like my mailman even had a podcast. So I didn't want to do one, and my agent kept saying, you know what? What it is that would make you happy doing a podcast? And I asked 19 people, Fran, other than comedian, how would you describe me? And 19 out of 19 all said one word, either dad or father. And I thought, well, that's where we need to be talking, because obviously.
Wow.
My passion, that's what I feel comfortable with talking about. So we started doing a stand-up dad and talking about the good, the bad, and the funny of fatherhood. And honestly, I think...
Is that what your podcast... Wrong. Is your podcast called Stand-Up Dad? What's your podcast called?
Stand-Up Dad.
Okay. Perfect play on words, yeah.
Well, honestly, I think that's what's wrong with the country is really a lot of it falls with the lack of participation from fathers, you know. And also how we perceive fathers, even in television. When I was growing up, probably when you were growing up, father knows best. Now in every show, dad doesn't have a clue.
Well, you're saying in today's shows or back then?
No. When I was growing up, it was father knows best.
Right.
Now it's dad doesn't have a clue in every show.
Right. Always making it, you know, like the stupid, yeah, no, no idea.
I've got kids.
Right.
Disney.
Well, that's the thing. But I see, it's funny because, like, you are decided to revamp your stand-up. I have a one-woman show that I call Love, Laughter, and Light. Because I also do motivational speaking around the country, I was like, well, why do I just have to have my stand-up and my motivation separate? Why can't I do stand-up comedy, motivation, and my wild adventures and put it into one show called Love, Laughter, and Light? That's more who I am. So I'm actually, I still, you know, do my stand-up, but I could do my one-woman show and be funny, too. So you kind of, as you grow in the business, at least I hope that most people do, you know, they say, this is really what I want to do, or this is really speaks to who I am. And once you do that, then people are going, why weren't you doing this all along? Well, you know what? It took me 20 years to figure out what the hell I was doing, so I needed to get here.
Amen and amen, man. I haven't called mine a one-man show, but it really has those elements in it as well. And, you know, that's where it's gone to. I'm not a big fan of doing the clubs anymore. I like doing the theaters.
Right.
I like going in and taking my time and taking people down a journey.
Exactly. And that's what it sounds like you're doing. You're taking them on the journey that they want to ride on, and now there are no buts. And let's quickly, because we only have a few more minutes, I want to touch on your other one, which is coming out for Christmas, the Nutcracker. So the Nutcracker is unique in the fact that no stand-up comedian has ever dedicated an hour of material exclusively for the holiday season. And this whole thing is a holiday show. But you also talk about vasectomy in there, thus the title,
yeah,
Nutcracker.
Well, that's
yeah, exactly.
It's a cut above
well,
the rest.
I called my agent. I said, I want to do a Christmas special. You know, and a lot of my material, especially the vasectomy, it's the number one requested bit that I have on Carnival. It's a 35-minute long story. It really is. It's an involved story of a Christmas gift that my wife was insisting that I do. And and it was killing. And I said, I want to do a Christmas special. And my agent's like, well, comics don't do a Christmas special. And I said, well, that's exactly why we should do
exactly. Why do you have to do what everyone else does?
It's rare to be the first of anything in stand-up.
Yes, and that's what, see, I am a big proponent of always being the first to do something. I mean, that's why I hold 6 world records, because I like doing things that other people aren't. Because, let's face it, there's a million comics out there. Well, not a million, whatever, if you're counting all the other countries. But if there's a lot of comics out there, but you want to do something that people go, oh, that's the guy that did the Nutcracker, the, you know, the stand-up special. Oh, he's the guy that's wife wrapped up his whatever, and that's how he got the title, or whatever. I don't know how she gave that to you as a gift, and I don't need to know the details. I'll look at the special. But
it's a great story. It really is.
I'm sure it is. And I am so happy that we got to talk. So, guys, if you're listening here and you've heard the whole story of how he lost his house. You know, remember, it was the whole country western story. How he lost his house, lost his truck, got it back, and now he's got the special. And he's got 5 fantastic kids. And there are happy kids walking around with cowboy hats that you brought that happiness to him. If you want to check out, and he went back to his God-given name, well, not given name, obviously his mother gave him his name or whatever, but it's William Lee. Okay, so let me spell this for anybody who, you know, because how do you spell William? W-I-L-L-I-A-M Lee, L-E-E Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N. And people, that's very simple. William Lee Martin. If you can't spell that, I don't know what to tell you. But it's WilliamLeeMartin.com. Check this guy out. Check out the Nutcracker. Come on, how many times can you watch the Grinch That Stole Christmas? Gio, watch the Nutcracker. Okay? And it was such a pleasure speaking to you. Have a fantastic holiday, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Fran. Take care, everybody.
Okay, take care. And you've been listening to Fran's World, and we're going to be back. And let's see, when are we coming back, Jim? And we are back. The next show is December 20th, right before the holidays. And for those people who want to see me perform, I'll be performing. Well, first of all, I'm doing my very first TEDx talk in Hilton Head on December 7th. And the topic is how a world record mindset can help you accomplish anything. So if you want to do all these crazy things or have a dream you want to go after, check out my TEDx talk on December 7th. And I'll be performing December 13th with my one-woman show, Love, Laughter, and Light, on Friday the 13th. What a perfect day to perform, at 7 p.m. at the KG Divine Spiritual Spa in North Hallidin, New Jersey. There's limited seating. If you go on my website, francapo.com, you can check out all these things and say, oh, now I saw her in person. And I want to thank Jim and Matt and Andrew and my entire listening audience and my guests today and for being on. And remember, you create your life, create a great one. Have a happy holiday. See you in December.
Shark, Shark Creative.
Thank you, listener. Yes, Shark Creative is the company you think of for on-hold messages. If you want to hear how it helps, you can call Mercedes-Benz of New Rochelle, Durante Rentals, Michael Labriola, Inc., Oak Ridge Staffing, Emma's Ale House, Northeast Environmental, or just go to sharkcreative.com and listen there. Meanwhile, we've expanded our services as your all-audio resource. On-hold messages, of course. production and placement of radio campaigns on the Pete and others too. And now we also have our very own internet radio station, Westchester Talk Radio. Look for us on Facebook at Westchester Talk. Have us come out to your next event, help you capture audio from your sponsors, associates, friends, bite into that first impression with Shark Creative. Everything audio. It just sounds better. Shark.